come on. I'll do the hump, sweet hump. Come on, I do the hump, sweet hump. Check it out, y'all. I do the hump, sweet hump. Just watch me do the hump, sweet hump. Yeah. Do you know what I'm doing? Doing my hump, sweet hump.
Sports gets so much attention, and so many people tune out the real world, that I try to take advantage of the opportunities to talk about the real world when sports lends itself to that and try to open people's eyes. I did not go as far as I would like to go because my thoughts on the NRA and America's gun culture, I believe the NRA is the new KKK.
Wow.
And that the arming of so many black youth and loading up our communities with drugs and then just having an open shooting gallery is the work of people that, you know, obviously don't have our best interest.
It's Reese on the radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. It is December 5th, 2012. Now, look, I've got Bill O'Reilly in the background, and you might be able to hear him, but Bob Costa, is about to go on the O'Reilly Factor, and I've been thinking about this all day about whether or not I was going to jip it. That's a joint in progress for you people on Backlink. Okay, he's here. I figured we have to do it. Here's Bob Costas with Bill O'Reilly. You can listen for yourself.
I'm not looking to repeal the Second Amendment. I haven't immersed myself in the issue throughout my life. I'm aware of it, as many Americans are. I didn't call for any specific prohibition on guns, never used the words gun control. I quoted from a column by Jason Whitlock, who was in Kansas City for a long time, now is on the Fox Sports website, in which he mentioned, I think credibly, a gun culture in this country. Now, it plays itself out in many ways, but it's a mentality about and toward guns that almost always leads to tragedy rather than safety.
All right, and we'll get to that in a moment, but I think I want to clear this gun control thing up, because that's why I got in trouble, because some people felt,
yeah,
and it's a very emotional issue, and
of
I'm sure you know that. And the second thing
you
said is Mr. Whitlock is really, really far out.
Well, I am not agreeing with
that. I know
I
that.
Even said,
but when you associate
with whom,
when you associate yourself with a guy like who's that far out there.
Mm-hmm. I was unaware of the remarks he made about the NRA and the KKK.
Okay.
I'm not even sure of the timeline, whether they postdated or predated, but in any case, I was unaware of them, and obviously I would disagree with that 100%.
Not scolding you. Just,
I get
just,
it.
You know, okay.
I get
not
it.
Scolding.
That's
just
kind of mild scolding compared to what I've received over the last 72 hours.
As long as you call a Christmas tree, you're okay.
Yeah, yeah. Merry
right,
Christmas
right.
to you too, Bill.
There you go. So let's advance the story a little bit. Gun control in America is an emotional issue because it is clear that the founding fathers gave the right to bear arms for two reasons. Number one, because they felt that the government might devolve into tyranny. And the second thing was the founding fathers knew that they had to settle this giant country and there weren't going to be laws out in the West. And people have guns to protect themselves from bears and Native Americans who didn't like them coming on their property. So there's a history here, all right? And most people don't even understand that history. So Americans grow up with the right to protect themselves against the government and against bad people. Then you enter into the modern age where you have a debate about, well, what's the government's responsibility here because these are lethal weapons? And that's where you come in. All right? So you're saying that you want a more stringent program by the authorities to make it harder to get guns.
You are saying, I'm saying that.
Now, you're not saying that?
If you were to ask me, I believe that there should be more comprehensive and effective controls on the sale of guns.
So what does that
mean? But that is not where I was coming from.
I know, but what does that mean?
Night.
I'm curious. How do you do that?
Roughly 40% of the guns purchased in this country do not require a background check for purchase.
Okay, so you want a background check,
you have
right?
that. You've talked about stricter penalties, harsher penalties for
criminals.
Exactly. There's that.
There ought to be training programs for those who purchase guns. I don't see any reason why someone should be able to purchase military-style artillery and body armor and automatic weapons. Only the police or the military
All of those are reasonable positions, even if you disagree.
And none of that impinges on someone's Second Amendment rights or the right to protect their home and their family.
Okay. And you know what? I agree with most of that.
Fine.
But here's where you made your mistake. You ready for your mistake, Costas?
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
All right, you're going to. Roll the tape.
It demonstrates itself in the Wild West Dirty Harry mentality of people who actually believe that if a number of people were armed in the theater in Aurora, they would have been able to take down this nut job in body armor and military-style artillery, when in fact almost every policeman in the country would tell you that that would have only increased the tragedy and added to the carnage.
Yes,
no,
sir.
No.
Now, here's the deal.
What do you mean, no?
I'll tell you what I mean. You and I are in the theater. Okay,
yeah.
In Colorado.
Yeah.
We're watching the Batman movie.
Yeah.
The nut comes in through the back door with his guns, and he opens fire.
And his body armor.
Body armor, whatever else he had, and he opens fire. So you and I are looking now.
And his gun that can fire off hundreds of rounds.
Right. And we're saying to ourselves, gee, I really don't want to get killed here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing other people go down. Answer my question now. It's very simple. As you know, I'm a simple man. Would you rather have the choice of ducking down on the floor or having a handgun on you to pull out and defend yourself against the man?
The hypothetical that you present,
thank you,
presupposes that in most cases someone dressed like the Joker is not going to show up with a bazooka.
Of course,
in most cases you're going to have many, armed people, all right? And Colorado happens to be a right to carry state,
right?
But you're going to have many armed people who would just be sitting there watching the movie. I would suggest that if that were the case,
yes,
it's far more likely than somebody playing Dirty Harry and taking this guy down, that over the course of time there'd be a dispute about somebody stepping
but
on someone's foot in the line for popcorn.
You're evading my question and going,
and that dispute would escalate because somebody has a gun.
You're evading my question. Bob Costas and O'Reilly are in the theater.
Yeah.
Do you want to hit the floor and hope you don't get shot, or do you want to have a gun on you that you could protect yourself?
I don't want to have a gun on me. No. And in that situation, in the dark.
I
think it's highly more likely that there would be additional carnage, bullets would be flying wildly all over the place.
But again, you're into the theoretical now.
No, I'm not.
You don't want a gun. I want one.
All right, fine.
Okay. I want to be able to protect myself against that loon with a gun rather than being on the floor.
And
in Colorado,
you would have been allowed to.
Right.
You're taking me in a direction of a debate that I did not enter into.
No, you set the premise. I didn't set the premise. You said the gun culture and that you objected to this kind of thinking. I have this kind of thinking, and millions of people have it. I want to be able to protect myself against that guy. We just have an honest gentleman's disagreement here. That's all. I do want it.
What I spoke about in quoting Jason Whitlock was a mentality. There is a gun culture in this country.
Now, let's get to that.
Tony Dungy, highly respected figure, said that when he coached the Colts, some 80 players before they cut the roster down show up in training camp, and he asked them, how many of you own guns? About 60 of the 80
raised their hands. Why do they have
guns? All right, they may feel that they need it for protection.
But why? Do you know why they have them? I don't know.
They may feel that it's part of a romanticized culture. There's an aspect of this, a kind of Wild West cowboy Dirty Harry aspect. There's also an aspect.
So they're macho men and they got to have a gun.
That's influenced by some of what we see in the inner cities, or some of what may be glamorized in gangster rap videos, whatever it may be. It plays itself out in different ways. In different demographics, and I would suggest to you that even if one has the right to have the gun, you got this many guns out there, far more often bad things happen, including unintentional things, than things where the presence of a gun diminishes or averts.
Okay. But I want to get into the gun culture here. So it's cool in the NFL and in the NBA and this thing for some athletes to carry a gun. Would you say that's true?
All I can tell you is since I made these comments, I have heard from players past and present, from coaches, from executives in the NFL,
right,
saying they've long been alarmed and concerned by the number of players who cavalierly believe that you have to have a gun. We now see in text messages between Javon Belcher and a friend, he's complaining that Cassandra Perkins may have had a boyfriend, and he may have had a girlfriend on the side, whatever. We haven't sorted this out yet. But he's complaining about it. And his buddy says, you better get yourself a gun. And he says, I have 8 of them. Now, The buddy didn't say, you better get a samurai sword. You better get a lead pipe like Professor Plum in the conservatory. He said, get a gun. I am not the least bit afraid to talk about the gun culture, to talk about domestic violence. I thought it was self-evident that this was a domestic violence case, self-evident, to talk about the effects that football and the culture of football have on many of the people who play it. I've done it before, and I'll do it again. I will look for places where there's more time to do it. In retrospect, I don't back up on anything I said, but I think it might have been more effective if I said, look, if we're looking for perspective on this, we're going to have a serious discussion within sports, an ongoing discussion, not 5 minutes of faux tears about it, but a serious discussion about domestic violence, about the culture of the game itself, about the easy access to guns, about steroid drugs and alcohol, and in the future, we will soon do that. I think that would have been more effective. It led to the wrong ending of where I was coming from. But I was talking about a gun culture. I never used the word Second Amendment,
and I think you were unfairly tarred there.
I cannot think of a single instance involving a professional athlete whereby that athlete having a gun averted or diminished a dangerous situation. But I can give you a long list of tragedies that came about because guys were packing.
All right. Thanks for coming in here, Costas. Good to see you, man.
Thank you, O'Reilly.
All right.
Merry Christmas.
Anytime you get in trouble, you come right here. We're going to chat. I know you have security here.
So he's defiant. What'd you think, Mayor? Go ahead.
I thought that O'Reilly did a bang him up, shoot him up job at putting Costas on the line and
right.
calling him out for everything that he said,
right.
especially the thing in reference to the Batman shooting.
Right.
But I think that Bob Costas also, in the end, came back. At first, he was definitely taken aback. He had to get his shit together.
He was scared.
He was scared. He knew O'Reilly was coming after his ass.
Right. He was very, very scared, very, very nervous. He's never been in that forum before. He's never dealt with conservatism or conservatives. He's very comfortable at NBC. And he felt a need or an essence, if you will, in himself to fight back. And that's what it was that he
Well,
did.
And he said that, he's not sorry for what he said. He just maybe should have said it. He's not sorry for what he was trying to get across, but he should have said it in a different way. That way it didn't come across exactly the way he said it.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what did he say that, what did he say when I turned around and looked at you and was like, what?
Mm. It's the point that I'm about to make when you finish yours.
Okay, but I wanted to say something about that.
The gangster rap videos?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, the stuff that you see in the gangster rap videos.
There you go.
You see it in all kinds of movies, all kinds of whitey movies with no black people in it.
No, Mary, don't go there.
So, or is he just talking about, he's talking about that culture. He's talking about in the hood.
Yes, Mary, don't you get it? Bob Costas is a racist.
He's saying, check this out. Now you've made it to the NFL. You've made it. You come all this way from the hood. You came all this way from the hood, damn it. You made it. You're a star. Let us teach you how you need to act in this circle.
Niggas got guns in the NFL. And Bob Costas doesn't want niggas with guns. That's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. No, you don't like it? Okay, you know what?
I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying I don't know if I necessarily got
that.
Well,
let's try out the analogy that he used. Because I've got
you for your.
No, I know you do, but I want to play you the audio. Okay? I want to play you the audio of what Bob Costas keeps talking about. He keeps bringing up Tony Dungy. There's a reason why. Okay? There's a reason why Bob Costas is bringing up Tony Dungy.
Why did Tony Dungy try to shoot his ass?
Tony Dungy's black.
And?
It qualifies his racism by using a black coach. I know you don't see it, but trust me, folks, when I'm on target here. You don't believe me? You don't trust me? That's fine. Okay? But he brings up Tony Dungy. Not just in this.
Saying it because he doesn't want any more people in the NFL getting hurt.
No.
Out of the contest.
No.
But he just.
No. Dirty Harry. Okay? Gangster rap videos. He doesn't have to use those analogies. He doesn't have to use those particular statement to in any way qualify what he has to say. Why is he talking about gangster rap videos?
Because he's saying it's a culture.
What culture listens in football at the NFL? How many NFL players are black versus white in the NFL? Quarterbacks are white predominantly, with the exception of Cam Newton, RG3.
There's quite a few black QBs this year.
No. Wait. We got 32 teams. I'm about to name you all the black starting quarterbacks. Cam Newton, Kaepernick, who's adopted, but he's black, right? We've got Russell Wilson in Seattle, right? Who else? Who else we got as a black quarterback?
Michael Vick. But he's
RG3, Michael Vick. That's five.
There's more, though.
Where are they?
Who's the QB for Tampa Bay? Isn't he black?
Okay, Josh Freeman.
Okay.
So you got six. Who else?
You got the Carolina Panthers. No, that's kid.
I got Cam Newton already.
Okay.
That's it, man.
I don't know.
That's 32 teams. There are six black quarterbacks. Now, what about the rest of the team? Linebackers. How many white linebackers you got?
I don't know.
Not many. Not many. Linebackers are predominantly black. How many free safeties or safeties you got that are white? Not many. How many defensive players you got? Offensive line players, you got a couple of whites. That probably splits down the middle. But defensive line players, nose tackles, left and right, primarily black. That means that when Tony Dungy says, and Bob Costas keeps repeating this several interviews.
That means white man might not be able to jump, but they sure can't throw, goddammit.
But wait a minute. If they are black men in a locker room, he says that he had 80 men in a locker room.
And 60 of them
raised their hands and said they owned a gun. 60 of them.
And then
how many of them do you think they were black? How many of them?
Oh, probably, 55 of them.
Exactly.
But...
What's the one thing that a white football player never has to worry about?
I don't know.
He doesn't have to worry about being in the frickin' club. He ain't in the club.
No, that's bullshit.
He ain't making it rank. Name the white.
What's his name? Ben Roethlisberger.
Ben Roethlisberger. One guy. You calling one guy? How many white players do you hear at the nightclub tossing ones? Making it rain, hanging out at the club, driving in limousines. How many?
I don't know.
White players don't do it. And the reason why black players in the NFL have guns is because of their lifestyle. And their lifestyle is in the club, hanging out at strip joints, hanging out at nightclubs with the hippity hop and the gangsta rappity rap. And they're forced to carry a gun because there's somebody out there about to rob them. And that's what Bob Costas is saying. I don't want these niggers with guns. That's it. You can like it or not, but that's what Bob Costas is saying. You don't have enough evidence here, folks. He said it right there in the O'Reilly interview. The gangster rap? You think Andrew Luck listens to gangster rap? How about Tom Brady?
I think they probably all listen to
it. How about Alex Smith?
But that doesn't mean everybody acts on it.
Brett Favre, did he listen to the gangster rap?
Probably not, but Brett Favre is older.
How about Aaron Rodgers?
I bet you he did. I bet you know some gangster rap.
You ever hear about Aaron Rodgers hanging out at the club getting,
I listen to gangster rap, but I don't go to the club.
Wait. So you think Aaron Rodgers hangs out at the nightclub listening to the gangster rap?
I don't know what Aaron Rodgers
I'm asking you.
I don't
based
know.
On his personality. Okay, whoa. How about Pac-Man Jones?
Well, come on.
Oh, okay. How about,
But Pac-Man Jones is in the news.
Hold on. Everybody knows Pac-Man. Oh, okay.
Pac-Man Jones.
How many stories did you hear about an NFL player in the club at night getting to some altercation?
Quite a few.
Ray Lewis? How about him?
Yes.
Yeah, guy brought up on murder charges, didn't he?
Yeah.
And Trent Dilfer had to be the guy during the 2005 Super Bowl that said, I'm going to Disney World, even though Ray Lewis was the MVP of Super Bowl. You think Trent Dilfer hangs out at the nightclub and listens to the hippity hop? Trent Dilfer? No. So what am I clearing up here? I'm clearing up that Bob Costas is an effing racist.
I don't know.
And he doesn't want niggers with guns because they're in the NFL and they're all running around with guns. And their culture, and he's talking about the gun culture. That's the reason why he sought Jason Whitlock's article, which
it
talks about what?
He shouldn't say gun culture, though. He should say black culture.
That's right. That's why he's using Jason Whitlock, who is a known race baiter, okay, and a race as well.
Or what's known as black culture.
The bottom line is that that's what he brought up. This was nothing more than Bob Costas talking to niggas. I'm sick and tired of seeing niggas with guns. And they're in our game, and they're effing it up for everybody else. These blacks, they have to have a gun because they keep acting up and they don't know how to act and they have to have a gun and they always do what? They respond to tragedy or create it. And that's all he's saying about Javon Belcher is that Javon Belcher is nothing more than a nigger with a gun. And if you put a gun in a nigger's hand who comes from the hood, he will shoot. Exactly. If you got a nigger with a gun in the NFL, somebody's going to die. He may not like it. He may not like being exposed for it, but no one's paying attention to it. But it took me to listen to all the audio that he's put out today. And I'll play plenty of it for you tonight, folks, before we go to break. Listen to what he says. This is what he says about, what's this one? Hold on. Here's where he says.
You get all excited and shit.
No, because I'm furious at this because I'm stunned that people don't recognize this for what it is.
Don't see it.
He's a racist. They don't recognize it. Here's him on Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. Listen to this bullshit.
Well, I only had about 90 seconds, and half of that, or close to half of it, was devoted to another observation. And throughout the day on the other network football programs, and then earlier, including in the prior segment on our show on Football Night in America, the whys and wherefores of what happened, the comments of his coach and some of his teammates had all been covered. So I was looking for a different way in. Where some people may have misunderstood my comments was I took one aspect of it as expressed by a writer whom I quoted verbatim. I took one aspect of it. I do not think that's the only aspect or possible aspect. There's clearly a domestic violence aspect. There's clearly the question, as I alluded to in a general way, of what effect playing football, which we know has debilitating effects on mind and body, at least for some, what effect that might have had, what effect alcohol and drugs might have had. And then another aspect of that is easy access to guns and a gun culture. And it was that aspect, the gun culture, that I focused on, not to the exclusion of the others, but just because I didn't have all that much time.
Now, that's the first part. Now, listen to the next. Well, he answers another question by Lawrence O'Donnell, which I just cut off. So I just want you to hear his answer. Pay very close attention to what Bob Costas says.
What I was talking about here, and I'm sorry if that wasn't clear to everybody, was a gun culture. I never mentioned the Second Amendment. I never used the words gun control. People inferred that. Now, do I believe that we need more comprehensive and more sensible gun control legislation? Yes, I do. That doesn't mean repeal of the Second Amendment. That doesn't mean a prohibition on somebody having a gun to protect their home and their family. It means sensible and more comprehensive gun control legislation. But even if you had that, you would still have the problem of what Jason Whitlock wrote about and what I agree with, and that is a gun culture in this country. It demonstrates itself in different ways. It demonstrates itself in the Wild West, Dirty Harry mentality of people who actually believe that if a number of people were armed in the theater in Aurora, they would have been able to take down this nut job in body armor and military-style artillery, when in fact almost every policeman in the country would tell you that that would have only increased the tragedy and added to the carnage. But it also plays itself out, and Jason Whitlock had some insight into this, it plays itself out in the inner cities where teenage kids are somehow armed to the hilt, and it plays itself out, and this I know the whys and wherefores of, in the sports world where young athletes are disproportionately armed. Tony Dungy.
Folks, listen to what he's saying. Listen to the way he works this into. Inner city into the NFL. He knows what he's talking about. He's
armed.
Exactly. He's articulate. Bob Costas, although idiotic, is articulate. Pay attention. He's making a very serious point here. He knows what he's saying, and he knows what he's saying, and he's definitely coding it. This is all coded language, folks.
But it also plays itself out, and Jason Whitlock had some insight into this.
And Jason Whitlock has an insight into this, therefore, black clarification. Listen to what I'm saying to you. This is a white man giving a black man props for clarification of his racism. He then brings up Tony Dungy. Here are two black men who are supposed to be respected. So I don't look racist. I got two niggas with me.
But it also plays itself out, and Jason Whitlock had some insight into this, it plays itself out in the inner cities where teenage kids are somehow armed to the hilt, and it plays itself out, and this I know the whys and wherefores of, in the sports world where young athletes are disproportionately armed. Tony Dungy, one of the most respected people in all the sports on our program on Sunday night, said that one year when he coached the Colts, he had 80 players before they cut the roster down, 80 players in training camp. He said, how many of you guys own a gun? And roughly 65 hands went up. Even if all those guns were obtained legally, you can't have 65 guys in their 20s and 30s, aggressive young men subject to impulses, without something bad happening. And I posed this question, didn't have time to pose it on Sunday night, but I'll pose it here. Give me one example of an athlete. I know it's happened in society, but give me one example of a professional athlete who, by virtue of his having a gun, took a dangerous situation around for the better. I can't think of a single one, but sadly, I can think of dozens where, by virtue of having a gun, a professional athlete wound up in a tragic situation.
Any clearer? Can I put it any clearer, folks? He's talking about niggas with guns. Please tell me that I'm out of my goddamn mind. Please, somebody. Mary, come on. I'm out of my mind? I'm out of my mind. Am I grasping at straws here?
I don't know what to tell you because I can't say that I agree with you. I mean,
you
don't
see it.
I don't.
Okay, but you know what? If that's fine. I'm going to go to Poverty Supreme, and I'm going to go to JC here on the Poverty.
What's up?
Okay,
what I do see is Bob Costas is putting these people, these ignorant assholes' actions that had guns, their actions on the fault that they had the gun. Had they not had the gun, that wouldn't have happened. But they had the gun, and then they made a choice to use the gun in a negative manner.
He's never made one comment about whether or not, if Jason Bilcher didn't have a gun, whether or not he would have been capable of strangling and killing his girlfriend with his bare hands, stabbed her with a knife, and then killed himself by driving off a cliff.
Well, he did say you didn't see the guy telling you to go out and get a
Right. No. But
my thing is.
What he's saying in that is that here was another Javon Belcher friend, possibly black, another black person telling him, you better get a gun because that's the society in which niggas live. Get a gun.
But the issue is not. Listen. If you live in a state or you're in a state where you can get a gun, you can get a gun. The issue is, why are we not holding accountable for their own actions?
You're absolutely right.
You can't blame it on guns.
No.
The gun cannot go off by itself. Somebody has to pick that shit up.
But he's saying, that's the whole point. He's saying that blacks aren't responsible enough not to fire the gun. Poverty, go ahead.
All right. Well, for me, it's just another play from the people up top to try and disarm everybody in your country.
That's
you
right.
See it? That's all I see that as a play of that. And at the end of the day, yeah, I don't see, you know, white owners. I don't see black people who have legitimately gone out and get their gun, killing people left, right, like I see white folk doing in America, who have legitimately got the right to have their gun. Why are you trying to attack black folk? You know what I mean? Who legitimately, you know,
but
I'm not saying illegal.
Well, poverty. Hold on. Here's the deal. The reason why he's talking about black folks is that because black folks are involved in a sport that he's involved in.
Yes.
So it affects him personally. And if it destroys the popularity of the game, it hurts him financially. He's on a big broadcast, and he can't have people being steered away from the game. He's got proprietary interest in
it. But ain't nobody, just because this asshole went and shot his baby's mama and shot himself, that didn't take anything away from the game for me. That's on you.
I think it'll hurt more people, though.
No, it won't. No.
I think it will turn certain women off to the game.
No, it will not.
But
if you're a woman and you're a football fan,
you'll stay a football fan.
If you're a man and you're a football fan, you'll stay a football fan. What he said and with them, you know, concentrating on gun control or whatever, will make people not watch their shit. They'll go to another program until the game comes back on.
Right, right.
They're not going to stop.
They'll never watch halftime. Them. They'll never watch the halftime reporting.
Halftime will be, you know.
Exactly. JC, do you think that I'm remotely close, or have I tapped into something that might be remotely true with this Bob Costas thing?
You know, I was trying to say that yesterday. When I listened to it yesterday, he was in a way to a degree getting slick with the mouse.
Right. This was
primary. Say that again. Say that again.
This was geared towards black players, and
yes.
I recognize it now more than ever because he talked about the gangster. He didn't have to bring up the gangster rap culture.
Now, I'm not going to disagree with you. It probably was more geared towards black players.
Ooh.
But I don't think that is because Bob Costas is a racist. I just think
he's a racist.
An idiot.
Sure he is. He's a
racist. Just because he might pick up a couple black players in the American football team, in the team, they don't mean that he's not no racist. Their man, they're just using black men as to run up and down and potentially knock themselves out.
Poverty supreme. Dumb black men are happily running up and down for the millions of dollars they get.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, you know what? And all that Bob Costas said, just take out the word culture and just insert black people.
Right, because what's the reason for bringing up gangster rap music?
Exactly.
What's the reason for it? Dirty
Harry.
What's that
got to do with NFL? What's that got to do with NFL?
Exactly. Let's go to White Mike. White Mike, thank you for calling in.
Hey, man. Well, you know, Poverty said something about, you know, black people aren't running around shooting up people like crazy like white people are. And that's patently untrue.
What? I'm talking about...
Not bear that out.
I'm talking about black folk who are legally allowed, who have gone out...
Well,
and
He said legal gun owners, Mike.
The illegal gun problem and the shooting problem with, you know, high crime and murder rates is not legal black gun owners, but...
Right.
There are so
right.
many illegal black say. Gun owners that it kind of trumps what the legal black guys are doing.
Well,
yeah,
no,
that's
and
what
it's awfully odd to me that you get so many, you know, the black political figures are so in favor of gun control when it's poor black people who unfortunately are the victims of black gun crime by black scumbags.
Yeah, by illegal gun
I don't
see
why
owners.
They don't see that. Yeah.
By illegal gun owners. Now, Mike.
But there's a problem with black gun culture, and I'll relate it to me. Okay, I'm a 42 year old white guy.
What I'm gonna say to you, white Mike.
No, wait, man.
I'm white Mike.
Look,
white Mike.
Hold on. I have a point I'm getting to, but it's really good. Okay, my heroes, my cinematic heroes as a young man, were all pretty violent guys. Okay, there's a lot of violence in the movies I watch and the guys I emulate and idolize. But they were like Rambo and they were Dirty Harry, and they were Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. These were the good guys using his firearm to get the bad guys.
Right.
The heroes in black culture who use guns are freaking Scarface.
Right. Right.
And gangster rappers and the movie, you know, Boys in the Hood and all this
right.
stuff, where it's emulating the bad guy. That's seriously screwed up.
You're absolutely
yeah,
right.
That's the role model for firearm usage in the black culture.
Yeah, but why, Mike, who controls the whole film industry? Who's the real power behind the hip-hop industry? So if
yeah,
we,
but
if
they still go see it, dude. That's the thing.
We wouldn't be dealing with it. I don't
Poverty,
know why.
I got to stop you. Hold on, Poverty. This is, again, Poverty, this is where the argument gets skewed. Because then, again, you're talking about the purchasing power of African-American people. African-Americans are just as smart as their white counterparts on what it is that they choose to view on the screens. If they choose to watch villains like Al Capone or Scarface or New Jack City or Boys in the Hood, if they are rushing to the film to the theaters to go see those films, they're obviously attracted to that element. So if Mike is saying that the counterparts were, I loved the quote unquote Dirty Harry's, the Arnold Schwarzenegger's in Raw Deal and Terminator. You know, Terminator is a perfect example. Here was a bad guy killing, you know, all of these good people. But who, of course, emulated characters like the Terminator? It was more blacks than there were whites.
Look, we're not the biggest purchasers of the rubbish, right? At the end of the day. You see what I'm saying? We're not the biggest purchasers of this rubbish.
You have more people who emulate the rubbish in the black community than those in the white.
That's what's been forced. There's not enough positive. And like I said again, we've got to remember who controls the media, who puts out these TV programs. We're not the ones who decide whether these programs can get put on TV.
Yeah, but you
we're
don't
the
have
ones
to
who
watch
decide
it.
On the record videos that get put out, right? It's in the end, it's down to your people who are putting this crap out. That is directed at us, and we take that up. Oh, it's not.
Yeah, but you don't have to watch it.
Activities
that's
on
the
TV showing black folk. The only positive program that white folk have put out of black people is the Cosby Show. Only positive, seeing black folk in a positive light, and you don't even hear of one of them kids wanting to join a gang in the Cosby Show. Everything else has got us showing how bad we live and stuff like that.
But dude, they don't have to reward it with their dollar.
But no, what
that's
are you
right.
saying?
They
though?
Like
I'm
it.
To say again, you
they
guys
like it.
The dollars.
Yeah, but
people,
first of all, I don't make any movies. Okay, my last name is not Goldberg or Weinstein. I don't make any movies.
But you don't have to reward
it with your purchasing power.
Listen,
the fact that it's popular. Says that there's something skewed with the culture.
Listen, sir, we're not, as I said to you already, right? It's not our fault. We don't control what goes
on.
Dude,
and as I said to you, sir, it is the black culture's fault because they buy the shit.
No, it is not, because you are the biggest.
Yes, it is, because you don't know how to dunk in your head and make them buy it.
Poverty.
When people come to Britain, the country.
Hold on, Hold on. Are you telling me that blacks are so starved for entertainment, okay, that they are not responsible for what it is that they purchase?
No. Let me tell you what we purchase. What we purchase is mostly weed, right? Crappy foods. That's what we mostly purchase, right? We're not the biggest video games, the latest trainers, and stuff like that. That's what we deal with. That's what we purchase. Drugs. You know, we don't purchase all that hip-hop stuff. Them rappers get rich of white folk paying for their album. That's what I'm telling you. We're not the biggest consumers of the music. It's white folk.
I went
to concerts, right, in this country. Yeah, I went to a Mobb Deep concert maybe 15 years ago, right, when I was into hip-hop hard, right? And I'm saying that when I went in every hip hop concert I've been, or any music concert where it's a black person, a black artist, yeah, it's been mostly white folk who's filled it up. not black folk.
Wait, hold on. If I may ask, poverty, that may be a fact, okay, that the purchasing dollars may be a majority of the white community that make these acts popular or finance, you know, sort of their mission musically. But here's my point. When has it ever been a product of, quote-unquote, whites acting out their angst or vengeance because of a hip-hop culture? It's never been deemed a hip-hop culture that has influenced whites to go out there and commit these sorts of crimes. But if you go to the black communities and you find out the background of some of these individuals, even the Trayvon Martin case, which we talked about extensively last night, who are their influences? Their influences turn out to be this quote-unquote hip-hop culture, which is why I'm making this argument about Bob Costas.
What I'm saying to you, sir, there's not enough, which has been done systematically and on purpose, right? It's not our fault, right? If everything that we see on the TV is not seeing us in a positive light. Most things that we see on the TV, my brother, and I'm sure you can testify, is showing black folk in a negative light.
And then
and
turn
the
it off. Let's bring Edward.
That's what fails, man.
Exactly. So because you guys are devils, that's why you...
don't call me a devil, man. Come on now.
You don't even know this, man.
But the devil.
Well, he has to because he can't take any responsibility for himself. So he has to blame somebody else.
Apologize for saving. Poverty, hold on one second.
Edward is a black... Poverty, hold on. Edward is a black man. Okay?
Okay. He's a,
all right?
He's
Edward
black
lives
black.
In Connecticut. Is Edward in Connecticut?
Edward, hold on.
Edward doesn't agree with you at all on this subject. Okay? It is not...
Man.
Hold on. Listen to what Edward has to say. Edward, go ahead.
Well, I took exception to him calling people names. I mean, he's calling people names because he can't take responsibility for himself. So, of course, he has to say it's somebody else's fault. You know, nobody, you know, forces you to buy a particular record or to watch a particular show.
Sir, is it my fault that I'm... Is it my fault that I'm out of my motherland? Is that my fault? That's not my fault.
Wait, hold the phone, dude.
You want to come and
Poverty, hold on, man. If you were an American black man, I would buy your story that you were forcibly taken to another country to pick cotton.
But you live in England.
There's no cotton plantations in England.
No, I'm from Jamaica, sir. I'm from Jamaica. My granddad fought in the World War II.
So you were taken? Hold on.
But the English didn't come to Jamaica and get you and take you to England for slavery.
No. They tricked my grandfather into coming over here. They tricked him.
Oh, those tricky devils.
He was only meant to be in England for 5 years. But then they ended up
those tricky bastards. What did they offer him? A white woman and a blunt? Come on, man.
What did you say, your grandfather? In America, though.
That's what they offered them in America, though. Yeah? They chipped my
grandfather. All right, hold on. Everybody, hold on. Real quick. Hold on. We got guys. Hold on, guys.
Oh, my God.
Guys, hold on.
Stop the press, Mike. You are the funniest man on earth. I love when you get heated. What did he want? A white woman and a blunt? What'd they offer him? A white woman and a blunt?
Too much. Sally.
You can't offer a man from Jamaica a blunt, Mike. They had to offer him more than that.
Yeah, please. No, a blunt. Jeez. All right, hold on, guys. Everybody's on hold except for Sally D. Sally, just...
I would like to introduce myself as the biggest white devil there ever was. But I got to ask the question of Mr. Purity Supreme. If, you know, you think we're all the devil, are we in disguise? What's it all about? Do you see the horns? What's that all about?
Well, Poverty believes, you see, this is where Poverty is coming from. Poverty is...
He's coming from another planet, Reese, and you entertain him, but the guy's out of his mind.
No. Don't say I entertain him. I do not entertain him. He comes on the show, and he comes in for honest debate, and he takes his licks, okay? Just like, you know, I take my licks when I'm wrong. You know, I battle with Mike too. You know, Mike can be vicious at times. That's Mike's got a freaking silver tongue. But the bottom line is, is that Poverty Supremes comes from a very, very angst-ridden background that is what we call sort of like the black theology power movement, so to speak. And that's not to disparage him. That's where he comes from. That's where his ideology comes from. I don't like the idea that he refers to, you know, the whites as the devil, and he believes that the blacks have been tricked, and you know they have no responsibility for what it is that they do from here on out. From here on out, like they take. That's why I have an issue with Poverty Supreme. But you know what? At least it's being challenged here, and it has to be challenged here.
That was talking about the mind control. And talking about like Manchurian candidate like stuff. I mean, this is where he's coming from, and it's really hard to take somebody's opinion seriously when they're so far out on the fringe.
Hold on, Poverty, one last thing.
I've stared devils and demons in the face, and I never refer to them as sir. I just wanted to say that for the record.
Well, no. That's because Poverty still shows respect.
And I've got respect. That's your nature. I don't call you the devil to mock you. I'm just saying what you are. You are what you are.
Poverty.
Well, my wife says the same thing, so you might be onto something.
Poverty, hold on. When you say that somebody, when you call them the devil, okay, when you're talking about white devil. When you're talking about white devil, see, I'm talking about clear and present white devil, and that is Bob Costas, for what it is that he said and what it is he's trying to perpetrate here. I want to stay on that subject matter, because I don't know whether or not the guys here agree with me here, because I think that there is an undertone that is being ignored here, okay? And the bottom line is that I know you agree with me that what Bob Costas is saying is an underlying racist.
He agrees with you. He doesn't have to think that.
Yeah,
he's
automatically. But let me go to Sal real quick. Sal. You heard my opening monologue when I played the audio. Do you agree that what Bob Costas is initially saying is that he doesn't like the culture of blacks in the NFL carrying guns, and this disturbs him?
You know, I mean, Costas is a buffoon. He's trying to back himself out of a bad situation, and he's trying to justify a stupid comment. That's really what it boils down to for me. But at the end of the day, is this really, I mean, I don't know if we're talking about guns or we're talking about white devils. I'm really not sure where this is going. But, you know, what I find with the people on the white side and the black and the Asian is that the ones that have these views that are so extreme are generally the ones that grow up in the suburbs and have had comfortable lives. They're not the ones in the street, because the kids in the street are too busy.
Very good point. Because, see, Bob Costas says he doesn't believe that people should lose their right to own guns. He doesn't believe that because he has armed security, and those people is what he would consider responsible people owning guns. But see, he knows that young people in their 20s, early 20s, as he stated in his Bill O'Reilly interview, these young people who have aggression. This is all popular talk when you're speaking about young black men. Aggressive, you know, angry, coming from the inner city. These are things that
loving
Bob Costas...
Yeah,
loving gangster hip-hop. These are all code words for niggas with guns. Mm. Bottom line.
Look, man, I was aggressive when I was a teenager, right? I was an angst-ridden metalhead. And when I got angry, I'd crank up heavy metal, or I'd go to a heavy metal show and get in a mosh pit and bang around.
Right.
I had access to firearms. My dad was a cop and a gun collector. I'm a good shot. I didn't turn to gang warfare and go shooting people, for God's sake. And hell, I'll go one further, man. I like NWA. I like the Ghetto Boys. I listen to some really gangster stuff. But I didn't emulate those assholes.
But that's what I'm saying,
yeah,
Mike. But here's my point. Do you think that I have a valid point when I say this about Bob Costas? Do you believe that what he is really trying to say, the undertone of what he's saying is that these are young black men with guns and he doesn't like it?
Well, that's the basis of the whole gun control history, is keeping guns away from black people.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, you know, some sense.
He's right. Of course he's right about that. I mean, that's again, that's the whole. I have the biggest argument about this.
Revenge. But
I have the biggest argument about this, Poverty, because of that whole salvo, if you will, that whole commentary by Bob Costas. What he's trying to do is to code everything it is that he's saying. And the fact that he's quoting a black writer in Jason Whitlock, and he's quoting Tony Dungy, a black coach in the NFL, first black to coach an NFL team and win the Super Bowl, you know, that's what it is that I know that he's undertoning all of this. Now, Edward, I have to go to you because I've asked everybody else. Edward, do you think that I have any – I mean, do you think that in any way whatsoever I'm tapping onto something that's truthful here?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's kind of similar. I don't know if you remember back in the day when you had that interview with, what's that fool's name, Bill Maher, and he said he didn't like the arrogance of the hip-hop community.
Yes!
It's kind of the same thing.
Yes! Yes, Bill Maher, and for those of you who don't know, Bill Maher was on the Star and Buck Wild show when we were on Hot 97 back in 2002. Bill Maher was still doing Politically Incorrect. We had him on the phone, and Star asked him about what his issues were with hip-hop. And Bill Maher said in the interview live on the air that his problems was that he didn't like the arrogance of the rappers. I'm big, I'm bad, I'm this, I'm that. He didn't like it. And Starr challenged him on that and said that in some way you're intimidated by the black man's arrogance, that upsets you, that angers you in some way and makes you feel uncomfortable. And that was the premise of what it was that Bill Maher was trying to say. And if you listen to Bill Maher in the past year, you know, during the election year, you know, he kept making comments about Barack Obama saying that I want Barack Obama to act like a real black man. And his definition of that was to be aggressive, to bust a shot, you know, to become, to niggerize himself.
Yes.
Well, Bill Maher is a nerd, man. He's an ineffectual nerd who grew up looking at popular black culture and wishing he was a tough black dude with a big Johnson.
Yeah. I think either Mike's on something, but
because,
he probably is.
Or wishing to be a part of that. But hey, let me interject here real quick. Now, given what Mike said earlier about that the whole premise was to keep guns out of black people's hands.
Yes, that's right.
Now,
well,
you play that clip all the time. And about the guy that says that that the NRA is just an extension of the KKK, how can that not be true then?
Well, hold on. See, this is my point. Now, Bob Costas, if you heard in the interview, and we aired it live, we gypped it. Bob Costas says he doesn't know when Whitlock made that comment about the NRA versus the KKK. He doesn't know if it was pre or post, but it was post. It was after. Bob Costas made his statements on Sunday Night Football.
Okay.
But yeah, it was afterwards. So he was only thing Whitlock was doing was doubling down on the fact that he had been given credibility on a national stage. That's all he was doing. Here's the audio of Whitlock.
Sports get so much attention, and so many people tune out the real world, that I try to take advantage of the opportunity to talk about the real world when sports lends itself to that and try to open people's eyes. I did not go as far as I would like to go because my thoughts on the NRA and America's gun culture, I believe the NRA is the new KKK.
Wow.
And that the arming of so many black youth and loading up our communities with drugs and then just having an open shooting gallery is the work of people that, you know, obviously don't have our best interest.
And in essence, all Bob Costas was saying was, I got two prominent Negroes who are saying exactly what it is that I'm trying to say. But if I say it in that way, people are going to call me a racist. So how can I articulate this where I can incorporate everyone and they don't catch on. They don't latch on to what I'm really trying to say. And the truth is that what he's really trying to say, and he was caught saying it, hip-hop culture, the gangster rap culture, young people, aggressive, angry, all he's talking about are blacks with guns. That's all he's talking about.
How come, if he's so worried about gun culture in the NFL, how come all those redneck offensive linemen, white guys who you know have guns, aren't shooting each other.
Well, but he's not interested in him, Mike. Hold on. He's not interested in him. Because when he talks to those white players on the game, what are those guys using guns for? They're going hunting. And he's okay with that.
Or they're buying AR-15s and handguns just like every other American.
But what's the likelihood? What's the likelihood that those players are going to be at the nightclub, Mike? What's the likelihood?
Oh, I'm sure I'm sure they go to nightclubs. They just don't bring
their guns.
Oh,
come on, man.
You
know? Have you ever? First of all, give me a perfect example. Mary brought up Ben Roethlisberger, right? She said, "Remember, Ben Roethlisberger was at the nightclub when he got that rape charge, right? Everybody remember that, right?" Okay,
yeah.
Who was Ben Roethlisberger surrounded by?
Police.
I don't know.
Okay.
He was surrounded by security. The girl who says that Ben Roethlisberger raped her, she says that one of his people, his handlers, not another NFL teammate, his handlers, his security, walked up to a girl and her friend and asked them to come up into the VIP area to meet Ben Roethlisberger. So he went out there with security. Who did the rest of these NFL players go to the parties with? When Plaxico Burress shot himself in the thigh at a New York nightclub, who was he with? Antonio Pierce, a defensive player for the Giants, his teammate, who rushed him to the hospital and hid the gun. So you get my point here.
You know what, Reese? This is I want to make one point, which kind of, it's along what we're talking about, but I think there's a larger issue here. The reality is, and this is going to sound controversial, but I honestly feel it's true. I feel white America is arming itself against ethnic America right now. I really believe if you look at the trend.
Of course,
they're definitely trying to cause a race war. But black folk ain't tough enough
for that. When I say that,
you are tough enough for that.
I'm not saying they're going into black neighborhoods. I'm saying that white America is arming itself and in an effort to, because of these fears, okay? But I'm going to tell you, I don't think those fears are unfounded, okay?
Well, I think you're right.
There are a lot of illegal guns on the streets with these thugs. So,
look,
you know.
I believe that what people are arming themselves with, and Mike, I'll let you go next after I say this. What I believe that they're arming themselves, you know, or at least like a coming doom, if you will, is that what they believe is not so much that their government's going to end up on their front lawn, but people who have completely lost everything, who are destitute and want to take whatever it is that they can, and they're going to show up on their lawns trying to get something, steal something. They're protecting themselves from what would be considered an Armageddon in this country, and that is just people coming onto their lawns. There are now farmers talking about how their hay is being stolen.
That's right.
Off their ranches. That's what they're arming themselves for. These destitutes who are running in and who are robbing them blind. Mike, go ahead.
Well, you know, the whole zombie phenomenon that's going on right now, which is huge. You know, with zombie movies and The Walking Dead and all these companies are selling zombie ammunition and zombie handguns. That's the whole zombie movie phenomenon is an allegory for the rising up of the unwashed masses.
Mm-hmm.
The first zombie movie that really broke big was George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, which came out in like 67, 68.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was directly after the Watts and Detroit riots. So the zombie thing is an allegory for the fears that Sal is putting forth. It's just a politically correct way to do it. But he's right. That is the fear of white America, is a massive culture of takers, as we say, who just get up and get enough and try to take from those who have. So, yeah, Sal's totally right. That's what white people are arming for. They're fearful of the poverty-stricken underclass coming to get them in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, you're abundantly right. There's no other way to put it. I think Al's nailed it. All right, we got to go to the top of the hour. Give me a couple of minutes, folks, and we will be right back because we got to talk about marijuana. And we've got this. we've got the audio on the former executive of Microsoft who's going to start this new marijuana company, and I'm glad Mike's here because, you know, marijuana is something that I guess he is a fan of and wants he wants legalization. So we'll play the audio to that. Before we go to the top of the hour, of course, I want to play this because a lot of people haven't. This is the 911 call from Javon Belcher's mother at the day of the shooting back on Saturday.
Is he breathing?
I'm Chuck Woolery with today's Save Us Chuck Minute. My fellow Americans, there is no doubt that it's tragic when anyone takes the life of another without cause, but to blame assault weapons would be like blaming airplanes for the 9/11 attack. The problem lies with the perpetrator, not the gun. So why should we have assault weapons? Number one, the Constitution. It's still the law of the land, and the Second Amendment says I have the right to bear arms. Number two, it allows for people to protect themselves even from the government if necessary. Lessons learned from living under King George. Number three, the threat of armed citizens deters foreign invaders, like Japan in World War II, who feared we would have a rifle behind every blade of grass. Number four, all guns are dangerous in the wrong hands, so it makes no sense to selectively ban some. Number five, the gun industry employs about 184,000 people. Ban the guns, those people become unemployed. Or isn't unemployment a problem anymore? I'm Chuck Woolery. To talk to me directly, go to Twitter at Chuck.
Come on. Do the hustle, y'all. Come on, do the hustle, y'all. Check it out, y'all. Do the hustle, y'all.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I L-O-V-E-I-T.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
I see some black people looking at me, man. It ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? 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 When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, ish. Ted Kamala never took ish from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, it's Mike Wallace. Run!
And welcome back 5 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Teresa on the radio. It is the 5th of December, 2012. Just a couple of weeks, of course, until the Christmas season, officially. I guess this would be the season, nonetheless. And the marijuana, Washington and Colorado, during the 2012 election, have both elected to make marijuana legal within the state, even though there is not a federal mandate, of course, going on with this whole proposition. So to be legal, they're trying to find out whether or not marijuana is going to be, you know, legalized, or people will be able to smoke it legally without getting some sort of federal, federal charge, I guess would be the best way to put it. But a gentleman who used to be an executive in Microsoft, who's left the organization, has now decided that he wants to bring in marijuana on a high-end level. Now, let me put this in perspective before I play the audio, folks. He wants to put marijuana on the same level that you would a 5-year-old cognac or bourbon or scotch, whatever. He wants to make it very high-end. He wants this marijuana to be expensive. This is not going to be like a $7 pack of cigarettes. This is going to be expensive. This is very high end. Now, his name is, let me get his name right, Jamin Shively. And he is going to make this happen very soon. Washington has already said that, look, they stand to get $20 billion, $2 billion, I apologize, $2 billion in taxes from marijuana sales in the next 10 years. But here's his story, and we have to talk about this, on whether or not people are actually going to buy high-end marijuana or whether or not it's going to perpetuate black market marijuana. It would only help the black market. You know, people are only going to say, I ain't buying that $20 bag of high-end stuff that normally would cost me $5. Do they sell $5 anymore? I don't know. I don't do the weed thing. Whether or not it's going to help or hurt the marijuana industry or whatever. But here's his story. This comes from the Washington Fox, I think it's a CBS affiliate. But here's the story.
When you think of premium Northwest products, you do think of Starbucks, Nordstrom, Boeing, Top Pot Donuts, and maybe soon Diego Pacer. If Jamin Shively's plan succeeds, this will be the face of legalized recreational marijuana. And who is this? It's Diego Pacer, a Spaniard who in the late 19th century was the world's largest marijuana producer. He's also Shively's great-grandfather.
He was supplying hemp rope made from the marijuana tree to the Spanish fleet, the Spanish Armada, during the Spanish-American War. So I've got marijuana in my blood, so to speak.
Now that small amounts of marijuana possession will be legal in Washington State next week, Shively, a former Microsoft executive, plans to spend the next year researching and building a business of retail pot establishments that he hopes will bring legitimacy to a long illegal industry.
So by creating the category of premium marijuana, we want a position that's similar to like a fine cognac, a fine brandy, a fine cigar, right? Something to be savored and enjoyed in small quantities by responsible adults.
The state of Washington estimates it will make about $2 billion over the next 5 years on marijuana taxes alone. Shively believes other states will eventually legalize marijuana too. And when they do, he wants Diego Pellicer ready to move in.
The buzz is in the air. This is a new industry in the making, and it's going to be a giant industry, and the state of Washington is going to lead the way. What Kentucky became for bourbon, the state of Washington is becoming for marijuana, and so it's going to be a huge boost to the economy.
Shively says his product will not be cheap, and yes, he did come up with the idea after a few bong hits.
I love the ending. He said he came up with the idea after a few bong hits. Hey, if Motley Crue could come up with their name after getting completely drunk on Jack Daniels, anything is possible. Now, I've got to go to our resident pot aficionado, White Mike, who probably loves this idea. We'll bring the rest of the guys in as well, but I'm going to go to Mike first on this one because I'm sure that you are happy about this idea and you don't see anything wrong with it.
Well, of course not. I mean, that's just the market. And to say that people aren't going to pay a premium for really good weed is totally ignoring what's happening now. I mean, you know Ralphie May, the comedian.
Sure, sure.
Right? Ralphie was a raging pothead. And he said that he was spending $2,000 a month on weed because he was buying stuff that was, you know, $500 an ounce or some ridiculous thing. So the market's out there. I mean, the Californians, because of their medical legalization or whatever, have led the world in high-end, you know, hybrid hydro weed technology. So, yeah, there's a market. People will buy good weed. It's just like beer or whiskey. I mean, some people buy Ice House and some people buy, like Sally does, you know, a nice Trappist ale. Of course it's going to work.
But wait. But see, I immediately see an issue here. I immediately see an issue here, and that's the marketplace,
yes.
Mike. And I'm sure that most people will agree with me here. Is that and I want to get his name right, and I'm screwing it up because it's such a weird name, Jamin Shively. What he's trying to do is what's considered a high end marijuana, like he's putting it sort of in the same area, sort of like getting a Cuban cigar, if you will, you know, getting a 5-year-old scotch, you know. I don't think that there are people out there who are going to spend this high end amount of money to smoke weed when they know that there's a back alley, if you will, to get just a simple bag.
Yeah, but no, man, because I do it.
Yeah, I think Mike is right about that. You know, I don't think it'll be successful as a storefront like a Starbucks, but, you know, there is definitely a market out there for high-quality brands.
So when you say high quality, because, again, I'm going to be a novice here, when you say high quality, are we talking about hydroponics? Are we talking about, you know, I don't know what the, you know, I know that people want to get high and they want to spend the least amount of money for it. We don't have an economy where we have a bunch of people who are going to spend money on what would be considered high-end weed, if you will.
Well, people do the same with alcohol all the time. You know, people buy high-end scotch. You know, if it's just to get drunk, you can buy a 40 of malt liquor.
Right. Right, but people won't drink the 40 of malt liquor because there's a stigma that's attached to buying the cheap brand.
Exactly. That's why I don't think a storefront would work, because it's still, at this point, a stigma.
Poverty, you've got to
say something, sir. I want to say something.
Now,
what I would say about, I'd rather it just come off the market, man, because it makes our people lazy and all them things there, you know. I understand that some of us won't be getting, like, it's better that they just take that off the market, you know. I mean, put it on the market, I mean to say, but at least then we can't sell it, and then we can't get put in jail, you know. I mean, like I said, we're going to probably turn to crack cocaine now more, you know, but at least we can get out. I think at that price that he wants to sell for him, you'll see less blacks smoking and stuff. So I think that's a good idea. Let's do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, because it's better than us smoking it, because it's so expensive. I doubt black folk would even touch that. You know, I'm only saying that it's good, yeah, on a level that it's keeping our people away from it, because that stuff there, especially we've got kids taking that stuff, right, at young ages, and they're lazy, you know? But when it's
right,
like that
sort of,
price,
you're sort of like saying it, it's like pricing it out of their market so that they can't get their hands on it.
Yes, I think it's good. Yeah, they should make it even more money. I used to be on that stuff, so I know the damage it can do. It makes you lazy, you get up, you're more lethargic. You know what I mean? It ain't doing nothing. If you have a fight and you're smoking weed, you'll get knocked out quicker.
Well, that's why you don't smoke weed and fight. You smoke weed, relax, chill, go to sleep.
Yeah. But these kids, yeah, they're smoking weed and pulling robberies and getting themselves into big arguments that they can't, you know, they have no business getting into because they can't even think with their right minds. You know, because of the weed.
I'll tell you this. Going back to what Mike was saying earlier about how much people pay for, how much was Ralphie Mae paying for per ounce?
How much was whom?
Ralphie Mae.
Oh, he's paying $2,000 a month, Mike, did you say? Mike, you still there?
Yeah, that's different. I mean, it's so different. I speak to on a daily basis. He's out in California. And they buy weed so different than we do in the hood.
Yeah, it's
bananas.
Yeah.
Bananas. I mean, the white dollar that they're pulling in versus the black dollar for the amount and sometimes the same quality is bananas.
Can I drop some weed knowledge on you guys?
Please, drop as much.
Okay, there are two different types of marijuana.
Okay.
There's indica and there's sativa. Indica is wrapper weed. That's that couch lock weed that Poverty Supreme, which sounds like a burger you get on a really bad dollar menu, by the way. I just got to say.
Let me finish,
Poverty.
There's sativa and there's indica. Indica is the weed that makes you slow and lazy and sit on your ass. But there's sativa. Sativa is the weed that makes you think and laugh and makes you want to move around and be creative and do shit.
Why is one different than the other? Is it because of the chemicals?
It's the way it's grown. It's the chemical. They're the same plant, but they give you different effects.
If you want to talk about
weed making people stupid and lazy, then how come Steve Jobs and Carl Sagan were raging potheads?
This is true. You take a weed by the street name like Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
That's basic green garbage weed.
Yeah.
But you take something like Diesel Sour or
Trainwreck.
We don't call it Trainwreck up here, but we call it anything that has a fruit hint to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a stronger weed, and it's a little more expensive.
And then there's like I said, there's a different strains. I mean, I've smoked them both, and I've smoked some weed that's just straight up couch lock, and that stuff's horrible.
That's you watch TV, play video games, and you fall asleep.
I want to play music and have fun and talk to people and think about stuff.
And then there's the other stuff a fly flying on across the room and landing on the windowsill. It's hilarious.
And let's not forget the gentleman who cracked the DNA double helix was a raging pothead.
So let me ask you this. So you guys are saying that you believe that this could be lucrative as a business, as other states, which we know. I know Massachusetts is probably going to be the next state. We already know Washington and Colorado are there. I'm sure
we're already there for medicinal purposes, though.
Right, but no, he's Actually, I listened to some audio of Spively today, where you know he talked about medicinal marijuana versus you know other sort of you know sort of drugs for that matter. He's a strong proponent of giving strong penalties for those people who break the law. But I believe that the only reason why he says that is he wants those people to be arrested so that his product is the only one that's sold. You know what I mean? It's sort of the block out everybody else.
But it's going to be basic market economics, man. Yes, there's going to be a high-end weed guy. But there's also going to be like the Walmart of weed and the McDonald's of weed. You're going to have people who are selling just cheap weed, just like you sell cheap liquor. I mean, it's like beer. I mean, some people drink Ice House and some people drink expensive imported beer, but it's all still beer. The market is served at all ends.
Gone are the days of the little manila folder bags where you $5 will get you 5 joints. You'd be lucky if you get a blunt and a half now out of what you get for $5, and that's of the Arizona. Now, you get something that's a little more potent, like or fruits or sour diesel, or I keep going back to those two, and there are a couple others too. The more potent it is, the more, I'm not gonna say it doesn't make you so much hyper, but it has you kind of flip it and euphoric to the point where you're asking yourself questions about stupid things like why am I not breathing? You don't notice yourself breathing.
Oh wow!
Or is that my heartbeat? And it sounds like somebody's at the damn door. But then you go off, then you see something on TV. And you go to thinking about it. Before long, you come up with a cure for cancer, but you can't remember. You're not willing enough to write it down, and therefore the time passes.
Oh man,
hey, Nick, Sally D. So here's my take on this. I'm not a pot smoker. I always preferred something that amps me up. So that wasn't my thing. But I am absolutely for something that tranquilizes a major portion of society. You know, the reality is people smoking pot are not out there looking to incite violence or it's like such a harmless drug. You know, I'm all for it. And the police don't have to waste their time, you know, processing stuff that is just irrelevant. People going to jail for smoking pot or having a bag of weed, who cares? You know, it takes them off that bullshit. They don't have to deal with that. They can focus on the guys doing the OxyContin and the meth that are attacking people and killing people and robbing people. There's no good reason not to legalize marijuana, and I don't even smoke it. So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't care if people smoke marijuana. I just don't want to pay for your medical bills if you fuck up your lungs because smoking it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, then you can just eat cookies, dude. It's fine.
That's the major drawback right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in California, the hot thing is edibles. Yeah, they've got it down now where you have THC breath strips, man.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Mike, because this guy, and I got to say his name, Jamin Shively, tomorrow he's going to have what I guess is some sort of marijuana testing in Washington State tomorrow. And all the major networks are supposed to be there. They all want to be there for this, but they're keeping it very, very private. They're not giving out the address. In fact, if you look up Jamin Shively on YouTube and listen to the interview he did with the radio station out in Washington, the host unfortunately gives the address, but you know, gives the location because they weren't supposed to make it public. But all of the news networks are going out there, and he's having what's called a marijuana testing and tasting. So you're supposed to go out there, I guess, and taste the marijuana. And he's also doing this thing. I never heard of this. But he's doing something that's referred to as sort of a, what is it, sort of like a steaming, you know, like they do with the hookah?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that, I don't know if that's popular, but I guess they're doing some thing where they're putting it in something and you can sort of inhale it or breathe it in with of like steam thing.
That's a vaporizer.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
What it does is it heats the marijuana up to the point that the THC vapor gets released, but it doesn't light it on fire.
Right.
So you're not smoking smoke. You're just smoking this vapor.
Right.
And which he says is healthier.
They have e-cigarettes now that do THC oil.
Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. My brother has quit smoking, and he now uses the electronic cigarette now.
Yeah, and they've got it with THC cartridges.
No, listen. Realistically, right, you ain't going to... They're not going to put out no easy, the type of weed that you're saying, weed that will make you be ready to work and that. Have you been to Holland?
What the F are you saying? It exists
have you been
now.
To Holland?
It's
have
in California now, man.
Listen,
what the
listen,
frick
listen,
are you talking about? It's in California.
I want to hear about this.
Have you been to Holland?
Wait. Hold on. Mike, you're telling me that there's already an electronic version of this?
Yes, in the dispensaries in California, everything I've said is available. They have THC e-cigarettes and cookies and soda pop and breath strips and brownies and anything you want. You don't have to smoke it. It's all in the market now.
Mike, I heard, and it helped me here because this ain't my thing, but I heard that the high is not the same. Is that true?
Different strains give you different highs. Indica and sativa are totally different. Indica is couch lock wrapper weed, and sativa is in your head, make you think and be creative and funny.
And both types are available in California, right, Mike?
Yeah.
They're available
both types
everywhere.
Available. And they have hybrids, where they cross the two.
Really?
Yeah, California is on point with this stuff. That Humboldt County is the weed capital of the world.
That's exactly what this guy, Jamin Shively, said. He talked about how Humboldt County is kind of like the frontier.
Humboldt County? Where's that located? Because I have a friend up in Redding,
Northern...
which is up around, I'm trying to think of a major
that
city.
That Silicon Valley
is a major city.
It's Northern California.
It is Northern California.
Yeah,
hang on,
I'll give you... Eureka is there.
Oh, okay. I know that area well.
Yeah, it's
okay,
way
yeah.
up north.
So this buddy of mine, he is in the right place then. Because the shit he's telling me about is like crazy out there to where, I mean, he's supposed to come back to the East Coast last month, but he won't leave.
I have a friend who went out there to work. She worked in a smoke shop and had a connection and went out to California, to Humboldt County, to work in the weed industry. And she just, like, she trimmed plants or something and
that's
came back with a buttload of money.
That's exactly, they paid him to trim them.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
He was getting paid to trim them. And then, like, this idiot, he's taking the leaves on and making tea with them himself.
Yeah, and they pay him in money and they pay him in shake.
Yeah, shake, right.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, they pay him in money and they pay him in shakes. What do you mean shakes?
Shake is
no,
like
they
the
pay
actual leaves.
The bottom of the bag stuff.
No.
Well, I got to ask you
yeah,
a question.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
I ask you a question, Reese. You're a black man from New York City.
Yeah.
You grew up in hip-hop culture.
Yes.
You had at one time both dreadlocks and then a high-top fade.
Yes.
How do you know nothing about weed?
Reese didn't smoke weed.
I think Reese is playing with us a bit here.
He didn't smoke weed.
Let me tell you what
it was. We all smoked. Everybody else smoked weed.
Ask him about a lucky strike and a stiff Chardonnay, and he'll tell you all about it.
Wait. Let me tell you what it was. Wait. Let me tell you what it was. It's very simple. Okay? My earlier experiences with marijuana, what always bothered me, was that because I am such an attention hog, and when I say attention, is I like to pay attention to everything. I want to know what's going on, what the topic is, what people are doing. I like that sort of idea where I can see everything that's happening around me, and I know everything. My mother and my grandmother would call it nosy. What marijuana did to me was make me fall asleep. And if I fell asleep...
I fell asleep
and I'd wake up, I'd miss something. And having missed something, I'd
fall asleep. Nosy ass.
Yes.
You know what it does for me? It makes me even funnier than I am when I'm straight. And it makes me really listen to the Beatles intently.
Well, baby, I like the Beatles and I don't get high.
So, and for a lot of people, it makes them, it relaxes them. You come home, if you live in the big city, I don't care where you live, whatever. Come home, you smoke a joint, you're relaxed, you're even, you can, nothing is kind of bothering you, but you're aware of everything that's going on. You can kind of put the rest of the day behind you and move forward.
Oh, and it makes sex a lot better.
It sure does, Mike.
Oh, a lot better.
I was going to say Reese. It does for normal people what a Tylenol PM and a Merlot would do for you.
And if you couple that with a few drinks, even better.
Man.
Oh. Yeah, guys, I know many people that enjoy it, and I couldn't.
And a bag of popcorn.
It's not my thing, yeah.
It's never been my thing. I just can't. I don't know why, but it's just never, ever been a thing for me. I've never enjoyed it. Not in the way that you guys do. I'm stunned the way that you guys do.
Reese, let me ask you a question. Now, the reason I'm going to ask you this question is because it's kind of where I fall. I was always a bit more of a drinker. I like to drink.
And I find that
people who like to drink don't like to smoke as much.
That's correct.
Because you can't smoke and mix a whole lot of drinking because then you're, the room is spinning, you're throwing up, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's rough. I mean, I do them both, and they both hit me kind of the same.
Okay.
But I feel a lot shittier after I drink.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, exactly. I can, I can sit back and, smoke a blunt, have two or three beers, and I'm good to go. A 12-pack, I'm done. I need a day to recover.
Well, hey, Mike.
I cannot believe what
Mike.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a weed hangover?
Never, dude.
Really?
Never.
A headache.
I don't,
after?
No.
After
not
you
at all.
No, see, hold on. I've always heard this. The only time that you wake up from a weed hangover where you have a headache, you were smoking garbage.
That's possible.
No, I've always heard that. Because I've
no,
had
that is possible.
Experiences.
But I've had them.
Weed and woke up the next day and my head was killing me. You know what the same headache that I have? And you guys will know this. Sal will probably know this just as good as I do because Sal and I are drinkers. Sal, remember the last time you were at a bar, a shitty bar, and you had the house wine and you drank too much of it?
Oh, shit. No, I ain't back to you on this one. I was never much of a wine taster.
Who goes and has the house wine?
The house
exactly.
Wine.
I'm a whiskey guy.
Wine is probably not the thing you want to order.
No, because I wouldn't drink the bottled beer. I don't drink bottled beer at a bar.
You won't
drink bottled
beer at a bar, but you'll drink bottled wine at a bar.
I will.
Because
it was cheap and I was.
You do not drink house wine at a bar.
That's the one thing I hated about going out to the club with him.
You heard what Sal just said. You don't drink house wine at a bar. And I've done that before because I didn't know any better. I drank the house wine and woke up with a headache. And usually it's the garbage that you put in your system when you wake up with a headache.
Well, believe it or not, it's a red wine you're talking about, right, Reese?
Of course.
Yeah, the red wine can, the flavonoids, there's something about the red wine that can lead to a really bad headache.
It's the tannins because they come from oak and it's kind of toxic.
Yeah, it's really.
But here's the thing, man. I do both. I'll go out drinking with the boys and I'll smoke weed. And I've never gone drinking and said, I should go work out right now. But I get high and lift weights all the time, and it's awesome. It's
so
fantastic, man. You have your best workouts when you kind of like blazed out of your skull. Because you shut down everything around and you focus on exactly what's going on right now. It's great.
Mike, you know what?
I don't.
It's not that I don't believe you. It's not that I don't believe you. It's just the fact that I've just never had a great experience with marijuana. That's just it. That's my
problem.
You
need to smoke with better people. Maybe you smoke with more white folks. I'm just saying.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
fun. I was in my living room practicing, watching the tube, back to life, different strokes in the afternoon. Scarface looked mean in the flick. Everybody who pumped coke back then was seen it for grit. 86, no fade, afro top to no fade, your whole average spot, seen lots of grit. Lee patches, Cassell glasses, suede pumas and boomers of rap not lasting. To the classic, 89 came through. Top fade, Taylor made Gucci.
Let's do it.
Jordan was champ, Mike Tyson was amp. Reagan was the president, the border was a place to camp. Just think back like this, as you reminisce, reminisce.
Think back
when Earth was steady, had the monster, baddest bitches, skin slicks was never hunter.
Think back,
hit me hoses for Red City, Death Comedy Jam, itty bitty titty committee.
Think back
when Martin was on, Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince, Summertime was the song.
Think back.
Buffalo with the spot, snitches got stitches, then you got jump setting in your shot.
Think back.
In your mind, a place and a time where we all can go. Don't need dough to shine. All you gotta do is be true to who you is. I'm original and God is my influence. Hip hop, bebop, jazz, rock, music, palladium and rooftop. Latin chords booming. We keep it moving to the beats. Tuned into the streets. The rumors and the passages preach. Rap, I'm master, so I teach. Each I touch. Respect the power of the microphone in my clutch. Say, ma, your little boy's all grown up. Hey, y'all, I told you all we got is. Up. I love pops, he raised me on some good old soul. Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, and Nina Simone. Songs in the key of life to hold. When the streets get cold, always focus when I'm reaching for gold.
PNC right there, you know what? Let no man take a thunder, bitch. And no bitch for that matter, you know what I mean?
This is for my 18 and under, 20 and over. Walking around with the weight of their clothes and on their shoulders. Look at me, 26-year-old, years unfold. Driving something bored, spot a year old. Did the goal, set my game up to grade. Rosary, throwback, the spruces and hay. Seen holes and dough, come and go. Remembering the rain, the crack, and power of dope. Witness miracles of babies being born, niggas being killed. Niggas getting killed, babies down again. Showed you block love, techno, marine, brackling. The classy lock men, new Jacob thing. Thin, four, five, six, truck navigator, Escalade. Bitches want dick, took it from the end of 89 through 99. I'm a nigga 2000 and beyond.
Metal lock limit. Wood sevens on the guard neck, they together park reverend. Lee patches got snatched, D's in the hatchback, the E's nigga pass that. Benetton bag, Diodorus. Niggas like, son, you fly, yo, I can't afford it. D-Step niggas, in the party, we tangle with anybody, jump in the train, put guardian name. Don't believe me, put a stack on it. Cops like, you can drink, put a bag on it, back in the day.
What's the day's mathematics? Saturday night specials, now what's automatic?
Bring back now.
When crack appeared, DDR got sold, shorty asses disappeared.
Bring back now.
I dollar, Tigra, 8-4 coke, my man Earl Manigo.
Bring back now.
Karate flicks, Gucci chicks, favorite team, the New York Knicks.
Bring back now.
Y'all rapping, these things changing. Passage of time, yeah.
Think back now.
We no borrow, we no let go. Tell them we are set trend, yeah.
Think back now.
Yo, all free thoughts and raw, them just can't comprehend, yeah.
Think back now.
Yo, we said, even though the time keep changing.
Think back.
Yo, 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 son, never going uptown, 125, you know what I'm saying? In front of the Apollo and shit.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, I was absolutely shocked at the revelation that Jesse Jackson Jr. is accused of spending campaign finances like a recent lotto winner. But what really shocked me was in the midst of this scandal, the people of Chicago reelected him, only for him to resign a week later, costing the state a fortune in special election costs. Jackson will soon be joining the prestigious list of Chicago luminaries like Dan Rostenkowski and Rod Blagojevich. And since no one is responsible for their own actions, not even voters, I would like to propose that Chicago open up a felonious politician museum. This way they can pick up some lost revenue that's been pilfered from the people. And make sure to leave room for expansion for more Chicago heroes like Axelrod, Emanuel, and Obama. I'm Chuck Woolery. And I think I just said that with my outside voice. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
And we're back. That, by the way, that'll be the first and last time you ever hear me quote Jimmy Fallon. There's a little character he used to do on Saturday Night Live. I hate Jimmy Fallon. But anyway, plenty of news, plenty of views before we end the show today. One of the stories that I have to get into is apparently there's a 23-year-old girl in Bethel, Connecticut, who wants to be a porn star. Now, folks, you all know that porn stars are traditionally known to have daddy issues. So do strippers. Well, this wannabe porn star has a huge daddy issue. A huge one. It doesn't get any worse than this.
Pardon
folks.
The pun.
Yeah. A wannabe porn star and her father have been arrested on incest allegations after police discovered they have been having a sexual relationship and even have a child together. George Sayers, who's 46 years old, and Tiffany Hartford, ironically, live in Connecticut. Her last name is Hartford, who's 23 of Bethel, Connecticut, were charged on Monday with third-degree sexual assault in an investigation that began with a complaint by Hartford's former girlfriend. That is correct. The daughter had a girlfriend. DNA tests prove they are father and daughter and parents of their child. Hartford's ex-girlfriend, who has not been named, went to police after discovering that Sayers, the father, was selling sex videos and photographs of her. The story goes on to say, though she consented to the videos being made of her and her girlfriend Hartford having sex when they were dating, she was upset that he was making money off of them and selling them without her approval. She was only 16 or 17 at the time that they were made. The father and daughter were also charged with obscenity and conspiracy. They pled not guilty to all charges. A search of Sayers, the dad's, computer turned up similar images, as well as a commercial video of Hartford, his daughter, dressed in risque outfits, posing in sexually provocative positions, crediting him with being the producer. Because she was over 16 when they were taken, they are not considered to be child porn. Hartford, the daughter, who would introduce Sayers as her husband slash father, told police she had dreams of being a porn star. This was before she became pregnant with her father's child. In separate interviews, both Sayers, the dad, and Hartford, the daughter, initially denied knowing that they were father and daughter, according to the News Times. Although Sayers, the father, said at one point he believed that Hartford, the daughter, was the daughter of his deceased brother. But of course, DNA evidence has proved that that
is
not the case. Is this a case of truth being stranger than fiction? It couldn't get any scarier.
But Reese, even if he thought that that was his niece, that made it okay?
No, of course not. That's even sicker. It's sicker.
Well, in Carolina, you can marry your sister without with permission.
Not in Connecticut.
As someone who is probably the only person on this phone call who has both dated strippers and porn stars,
yeah,
I'd like to say thank God for their daddy issues. It's fantastic.
That's
why
you're
the
devil. It's all single Mike.
Edward, that's your neck of the woods. What's going on with your people out there, Edward?
I don't know, man. I mean, rich people think that Connecticut is a bunch of rich, you know, blue bloods, but there are some towns in there that you can put straight up out of the most redneck parts of the South.
I was going to say, exactly. What trailer park did they come out of in your neck of the woods?
Do they have a trailer park over there in Bethel, Connecticut?
I don't know about Bethel, but there are trailer parks in Connecticut.
Yeah, there are trailer parks in Connecticut, but I don't think there's none down in Bethel.
How much you want to bet they lived in a trailer park?
Oh, come on.
I was going to bet she didn't look like a porn star.
She was having sex with her father, letting
she
him...
She looks like a young Roseanne Barr.
Having sex with her girlfriend.
Yeah, that's the interesting
letting
part.
Letting him tape that.
Yes.
Like, and then getting pregnant with your father's
that's,
kid. Like,
that's...
Where the hell was her mother?
I know. I'm friends with a retired porn star
okay.
who will remain nameless, who has a husband, but also has a boyfriend. And the rumor I'm hearing is the boyfriend is actually her biological father.
Stop!
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, Mike, are you serious?
It's
yeah.
the nature of the culture, the incestuous nature of the culture. That's what we're going to call, before I call Bob Costas.
That's why
yeah,
I'm saying the devil, you know. That's why I call these people the devils, man.
You guys are comedy supreme.
And comedy supreme.
Listen, my history is written in blood.
Wait, let me finish.
Your history is written in blood.
Hey, go ask Oprah about when her cousins and daddy were having sex with her, and get back to you about the devil thing, bro.
Yeah, you guys were raping little boys in Africa when you came to enslave my people.
Oh, no, relax with that one, my friend, because if I know correctly, in Libya, and that's Africa, my friend, they were raping Ambassador Chris Stevens after they killed him, weren't they? So don't talk to me about...
Okay, and wait a minute, Poppy, please stop referring to the white man as the devil.
It's pretty offensive.
Listen,
cold,
I don't say it to mock anyone, you know.
Yo, it's not mock, dude. It's insult.
No,
it's
I'm not trying to mock anyone. I'm just saying how it is. I'm just telling the truth.
No.
I'm telling you how it is.
Yeah, well, show me. And he did show me different. Then I won't call the guy the devil. The guy's the devil.
Who's the devil?
And the devil will be the devil.
Wait. Who's the devil? The father who's having sex with his daughter or giving her a child?
Devil.
No. We'll accept that.
Okay,
but
you're saying the white man is the
yeah,
devil.
Yeah, do not broach, bro.
I never said the white man's the devil. I called various people the devil because of the way they're acting.
Oh, okay.
And
No, that's fair. I never once said the white man was the devil.
I never once said that.
Well, justify yourself calling Mike and Sal a devil then.
Because they're trying to talk black to say what? they're trying to say that black folk deserve these
things. No, what they said, you said you classify a person's actions.
You should,
what actions have they done?
What?
Yeah, Poverty, hold on. Listen, this is an opportunity to make very clear. You're saying that a person's actions, and that's a very, very important word here. A person's actions make them devils. You know what?
White folk, I meant it like how your wife meant it. That's how I mean it still.
Oh, you're saying that when someone does something...
They're innately the devil. You've destroyed the earth. Everywhere you've been, you've went and killed people innocently just for their land and what they have. You see,
well,
if I was in control, I wouldn't even do that to you people.
And you're saying this from the land of England, one of the cradles of modern civilization created by the white man. Thank you.
Well, wait, don't get Poverty wrong. Poverty hates the white man in England probably more than anyone.
but he's more than happy to live there in the country that the white man created.
Yes, hold on, Poverty.
Your country
is no
built on the blood of black people.
Wait. Poverty is no different than...
Wait, hold on, Reese. I got to get in here. Black people didn't build shit in England.
No. Black people built...
You guys didn't get there until like the 1940s.
No, what are you talking about? The wealth of England was built on the slave trade, and your country was built on the
blood
of the black people. The black
dude, England has been around since 1000 AD.
You're not a devil, but the devil.
What, Poverty? You're off base. Hold on. You're off base. Hold on one second. The bottom line is that Poverty doesn't say anything different from his part of the world than what it is that we hear in our own communities here in the United States. And we have these
what,
black...
from the new Black Panther
party? Yeah, exactly.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Because, no. And not to defend them.
Why you with weapons?
Not to defend poverty, but I don't think any of us here really know the history of England like he would know it either. Just like he would know the history of the United States like we would know it.
Was England a prosperous society before they found the blacks in Africa?
No, it was not.
Bullshit!
Are you insane?
No.
England was an empire before they found Africa, you fool.
That's right. Don't come with that rubbish, because we all know that.
You don't know what the hell you're talking about, poverty pimp supreme. England was one of the greatest empires in the history of the world before they found Africa in the 1500s.
Hold on, I got to control myself. Wait, guys. He called him poverty pimp supreme. Jesus Christ. Hold on. Before we go nuts, God, I can't believe this.
I took myself out of that equation.
There was something I wanted to get into. I didn't want to drag this out. I just wanted to talk about the racist daughter. Wait, and we're going nuts. One last thing we have to bring up, and this is right in Poverty Prince's weird wheelhouse. Why did I call him Poverty Prince?
You
keep calling him that. Poverty Supreme's wheelhouse, because this happened in England. Well, it happened via Australia to England.
Oh, this is funny.
This is great. Okay? So, a radio show is in trouble, and they've been forced to apologize for doing a prank phone call to the hospital that Kate Middleton is staying in because she's suffering from severe morning sickness. Okay? And look, I'm from the radio game. I followed radio since I was a child. Okay? Since I was 15 years old. And you all know that. And this was hilarious. But there are people in the United States who are calling these people stupid, ridiculous, or whatever, but I want you to hear it. And tell me whether or not you think this was over the line, or whether or not these elitists like Brian Williams from NBC are being a little too sensitive, or probably a little nut-huggy when it comes to the royal family. You know, these people complain that we shouldn't put certain people on a pedestal, but here they're putting Kate Middleton, a nobody, who just married a guy, and now she's an elitist. But here's what the Australian radio show, Summer 30, did. They called up the hospital where Kate Middleton is. I want you to hear this.
We've been handed a phone number, and we have been told that this phone number is the hospital where Kate Middleton is currently staying. Now, we thought we'd give it a call. We don't want to cause any trouble.
Yeah.
We don't want to stress her out, because she's doing it tough.
Yeah.
But I reckon we can maybe get her on the radio tonight.
Look, I don't know. I mean, everybody would be trying.
Well, this is why I thought of a plan. We can't just ring up and go, "Hi, it's MC and Mel from the Summer 30. Can we chat to Kate?" Hang up. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
You are going to be the Queen.
This is awesome.
I'm going to be Prince Charles.
I'm the Queen.
Ben and Em, you're involved in this as well. We thought that maybe you could be the Royal Corgis, if you're okay with that. Yes, exactly.
Sure, we'll pop on in
we'll
a bit.
Come into the studio. I'm going to dial this number.
This is fun. Oh, I mean, this is fun.
Yes, yeah. So you're going to be the Queen.
Hello, I'm the Queen.
Hello, Prince Charles of the Hill,
mummy. Prince Charles. Mm-hmm. I like your ears.
And Ben and Em are going to be the Royal Corgi. So let's give this hospital a call.
Okay.
And see if we can get Kate Middleton or maybe even Prince Wills on the phone tonight. So the number's going in. Oh, jeez, I hope this happens.
Hello, good morning, King Edward the Seventh Hospital.
Oh, hello there. Could I please speak to Kate, please, my granddaughter?
Oh, yes, just hold on.
Thank you.
Are they putting us through?
Yes.
If this has worked, it's the easiest prank call we've ever made. Your accent sucked, by the way. I just want you to know.
I'm not used to playing old 80-year-olds.
What about
this then? Kate, my darling, are you there?
Good morning, Mum. This is the nurse speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, I'm just after my granddaughter, Kate. I want to see how her little tummy bug is going.
Mummy?
She's sleeping at the moment, and she has had an uneventful night. And sleep is good for her as we speak. She's been getting some fluids to rehydrate her, because she was quite dehydrated when she came in. But she's stable at the moment.
Okay, I'll just feed my little corgis then. So what? When is a good time to come and visit her? Because I'm the queen, so I need to live down there. A prince, Charles.
Mummy, is everything okay?
Oh wait, my Charles. When can you take me to the hospital, Charles?
When will it be all right to come down and see her? Maybe in the morning or something, if that's okay.
I would suggest that any time after 9 o'clock would be suitable because the doctor will be in the morning.
Okay.
And we'll just be getting her freshened up in the morning. I would think any time after 9.
Wonderful. And is Wills still there? Has he gone home? I haven't spoken to him yet.
He went home at about 9:30 last night. No, actually probably about 9 o'clock last night.
Okay. Lovely. But they're all okay? Everything's all right?
Yes, she's quite stable at the moment. She hasn't had any retching with me since I've been on duty. And she has been sleeping on and off.
Wonderful.
I think it's difficult sleeping in a strange bed as well.
Yes, of course. It's hardly the palace,
oh,
is it?
Oh, nothing like the palace, is it, Charles?
Yes.
And when are you going to walk those bloody corgis?
Mumsy, I'll go and take the dogs outside.
I need to go visit Kate in the morning. My dear, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. She has given up real information.
Mumsy, I seem to have believed everything that you just said.
I am the queen. Bow for me. Bow for me.
Bow for you and your terrible accent.
So they're getting hell for this, guys. And they were forced to apologize for doing what it is that anybody would have done on a frickin' morning show to see if you can get in to pull a prank.
That's great.
They're forced to apologize?
You know, I had a corgi once.
You can't deny that was pretty funny.
Hilarious.
It's funny, but they're part of the Commonwealth, and they're not really supposed to mess with the royal family. As stupid as it seems, Australia still has to kind of bow down to those people. And to be fair, man.
And so does America.
Come on. We don't have to. We do.
Yes, you
but,
do.
We just kind of find them interesting.
Yes, you do. The Queen owns America. It's face facts, man. If the Queen said she wanted our bomber out tomorrow, he has to come out. Let's get that straight. Queen runs everything.
You sound like the devil.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why don't you take off your freaking world family
character? You're a descendant of a criminal. Remember that. You're a descendant of a convict. You are a devil by nature.
I'm not freaking Australian. I'm freaking French, you moron. My people came from France, you half-witted stone dreadlock having fool. Lumberclock fool.
You're just so vile. I
love poverty.
I'm not vile.
He's trying to disrespect me intellectually.
I respect you.
No, not you. Did White Mike intellectually disrespecting me and Mary Keith and telling me to stop calling them the devil? Prove me otherwise.
Because you're freaking retarded. You have literally smoked yourself retarded, Bob Marley.
Then the devil. If you're saying that the queen is devil, you're saying I'm devil.
That's why you're the
devil. Hey, this sets us up for tomorrow night's Royal Rumble.
You see little racist jabs that he's been making.
It's I want to make you my ritualistic sacrifice.
Can everybody hold on a minute, please?
You couldn't even say that to me. If you was face-to-face with me, you wouldn't say that.
Hold on. Listen to me.
But I would never put your people through what you put my people through. That's one thing I would never do.
All right.
I'm not a revolutionary. People calling me a revolutionary.
I'm a 38-year-old white woman in this country. I'm not responsible.
I don't want nothing to do with white women. Nothing to do. You can
and I, in no way, for any reparation or anything else because I'm not responsible. I personally did not engage in anything that had to do with anything in slavery. I was not born in those times, and I will not take responsibility. I will not hold that on my shoulders. That is not my cross to bear. So if you want to call me a devil because I'm a white woman, keep calling me a devil.
Can you say goodnight, baby?
Goodnight.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Tonight's Battle Royal sets us up for tomorrow.
Yes. Jake the Snake Roberts and Diamond Dallas Page joins us tomorrow right here on Reason Radio. We'll see you then.
Love, Father. Cause this ain't nothing but the E and D.